I am interviewing Dr. Patrick Colleton. This is Sunday, February 16, 1986. Good afternoon, Pat.
Hi, Michael.
Pat, now, first, why don't we start off with a little bit of autobiographic material, where you were born and the date and so forth.
I was born in Fargo on September 18th, 1933. And I have two older brothers, who one is a physician who lives in Hartford, Connecticut. My mother is still living. My father died when I was about 12 years old. We grew up, or we lived in a small town about 30 miles south of here called Kent, Minnesota, and we moved to Moorhead when I was about 14 years old. And I attended Shanley High School and went to school at North Dakota State and then on to medical school at Tulane University in New Orleans. Had a happy childhood, did a lot of hunting and fishing, and the small town atmosphere, I think, was, for me at least, was a very happy time. I was a chemistry major in college, and until about my junior year, my older brother was in medical school, and that's how I became interested in medicine. And I recall he was home several times with his medical books, and I became very enchanted with medicine at about that time, and so I switched into pre-med and then on into medical school. As far as ophthalmology is concerned, I became interested in that when I was an intern at an Army hospital in Tacoma, Washington, and subsequently took my residency training at Fitzsimmons Hospital in Denver, Colorado, which was between 1961 and 1964. After that, I spent another about 4.5 years in the Army, being stationed in Japan and also in Germany, and again in Tacoma, Washington. These were, again, happy times. We, despite the fact that it was not it was not easy for my wife and small children to move, and I think we did move about 6 times while I was in the service, it was still enjoyable. We had an especially good time when we were stationed in Japan about 30 miles from Tokyo. In 1967, I was discharged from the service and came back to Fargo and worked 1 year with Dr. Cal Furco, and after that, I set up my own office in Moorhead and have been practicing as a solo ophthalmologist in Moorhead since 1968.
Has the thought ever occurred to you that you might have gotten into a different profession from medicine, or have you felt that this has been the most fulfilling to you?
Well, it has been fulfilling. I've been happy. I think if I would have stayed with this chemistry major that I was in college, I would no doubt be working for something like DuPont or one of these big chemical companies, as that's where most of the chemical engineers went, was back east to work in some of the larger companies. I really doubt whether I would have been as happy doing that or being in that type of occupation as I am as a medical doctor.
Did chemistry have a particular appeal to you? It seems that chemistry, ophthalmology is a pretty far cry from... I'm trying to reconcile the ophthalmology with which you've been so happy with these former aspirations of chemistry. They don't seem to go together.
Well, they certainly don't. I think one of the things that intrigued me with chemistry at the time, or one of the things that steered me that direction, was that I had done very well in chemistry in high school and first 2 years of college, knowing that North Dakota State was one of only 2 schools in the country that taught what's called a paint chemistry course. And so I enrolled in that And at that time, the graduates in that particular field were getting very, very good jobs. And I suppose that's one of the things that attracted me to it.
Now, I know, Pat, that one of your boys is in medical school at the present time. Did you have much influence over him to make that, have made that decision?
Well, actually, I've not encouraged him or discouraged him either way, and this was his decision. I have pointed out to him some of the what I consider to be failings of medicine right now, and also have pointed out that we are becoming quite saturated with physicians in this country and in this area. But that didn't seem to have any effect. He still wanted to pursue medical school, and he's got two younger brothers that have the same feeling.
Well, you're going to have a house full of physicians, it appears.
Yeah, they make it into school.
I've always had the theory that a man, certain individuals of certain personalities will become doctors no matter what happens. They are cut out for that kind of work. I know I have that feeling for myself, having been a physician. I just could never imagine what else I might have done. And I have an idea that a certain segment of our population is like that, including your boys and yourself. Do you agree that there's such a type of individual who will become a doctor no matter what?
Yeah, I think that's true. There's certain families where just generation after generation become physicians or in the medical field. And, of course, the one or both parents, if they're inclined to be motivated toward medicine, that the environment in which they're brought up will have a very profound influence on them.
Is there anything that you might, in general, not just to your own children, but to any young aspirant of the medical profession, what kind of advice might you give such a young person?
Well, as I say, with the changes that are going on in medicine, there's been just a complete evolution or transformation in the past 10 years. It's very hard to direct a young person. I think now that there's a whole different philosophy. I don't think you'll see any physicians, or very few at least, who will set up in a community like Fargo-Moorhead and like I did as a solo practitioner. I think well over 90% of the young graduates are going to be either signing up with an HMO or with a clinic, and they will be certainly at risk if they try to just make it on their own. This would, of course, not apply if they went into a small community where there are few or no physicians.
You seem to regard these changes in the way medicine is being conducted with some misgivings. Do you feel good or bad about what's happening to medicine?
Oh, I think if I had to choose, I'd say bad. I think there's a lack of respect or loyalty or whatever other term you want to use between physicians, and probably the image of the physician, has certainly been tarnished, I think, in the past several years. We are, I'm afraid, looked upon as being greedy and the old-fashioned country doctor is that respect that the physicians once had, I think, has more or less vanished, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, it was something of almost a veneration for the old-time family doctor, which we seem to be losing. Well, I think it was John Ruskin who said the world is ever-changing, but the changes never change. So this could be kind of a pendulum swing, perhaps. Maybe we're down at a bad time, but I have a lot of faith in the future. I think I have a son in med school, and I think there will always be bright-eyed, idealistic young men going into medicine. And that'll never change, irrespective of the system. Do you have any qualms about the immediate future of medicine? Do you see it as really severely threatened, or will it mush through all this difficulty and make it?
Well, we're certainly going to make it, but I think we're going to have to probably be a little better organized when it comes into the political arena, especially with regards to problems with malpractice and physicians now, even OBGYN, as we're reading, are discontinuing the obstetrical part of their practices, which I think is a crying shame, but that's what's happening, and they're more or less being forced into it because of the political and financial problems that have occurred through the malpractice crisis.
Has ophthalmology been relatively spared of malpractice problems, or is it right in there with the others, the orthopedics and plastic surgery?
It has been spared. I'm not sure exactly why, but just as an example, there's a company now back east, and a lot of these companies are not even taking new applications, such as St. Paul Fire and Marine, but there's a company back east where they are underwriting ophthalmologists only because of the very low rate of litigation.
Huh.
They're just taking ophthalmologists. They'll probably branch out and take ear, nose, and throat or urology next, but their premiums are approximately 50% lower than the premiums if you take from a big company like St. Paul Fire and Marine.
I suppose, could that possibly be because ophthalmology is such a well-defined specialty? You know, anatomically, an eyeball is an eyeball, and there's no argument up or down the human anatomy like other specialties are having. You know, who's going to treat the trachea, the ENT man or the chest surgeon? That's how you fellas have your anatomy nicely defined. And I wonder if that isn't
I think that's part of it. And with the new techniques and the technology, the lasers and the operating microscopes and so forth and so on that we use now, it has become a more exact science. And so I think we're having fewer problems.
What are some of the newer ophthalmologic things on the horizon that are coming along?
Well, I just mentioned the laser. That certainly it's not really new anymore. It's been with us about 8 or 10 years now, but it's one of the modalities we're using to treat not only diabetes, which we started using it, but also it's being used now for treating glaucoma, and it's also used for what we call an after-cataract membrane, which can be split with the laser beam, and this is certainly an advancement. We can do procedures now with the laser that before we had to actually operate on the eye. Now the laser will take the place of the surgical procedure, which is especially true with glaucoma. The other newer things on the horizon, one of the procedures being done now is called radiokeratotomy. That is certainly one of the newest. This is a procedure in which little cuts are made in the cornea of the eye to reduce or completely eliminate nearsightedness, which is the major type of refractive error that we see in this country. About 80% of the people who wear glasses are nearsighted. And so this is a new procedure. It's still, I feel, in the experimental stages, and it hasn't gotten to where it is predictable enough to where it should be universally done. And I think, being done by one doctor in Fargo right now, but the rest of us are standing back and just watching and observing to see if this procedure is indeed going to be something for the future.
What about lenses. I know that you use, what are they, plastic lenses?
Yeah, well, actually, what we're using now with cataract surgery, and again, they've been used for 7 or 8 years now, they're called implants. This is a little piece of plastic that's placed in the eye and left in permanently when the cataract is removed. The plastic is the same type of material that from which contact lenses are made. And about 80 to 90% at least, the people who have cataract surgery will now get one of these implants. This eliminates the need for the thick cataract glasses, also eliminates the problems that these elderly people would have if they had to wear a contact lens on the outer surface of the eye. So this has been a definite improvement for people who have had the cataract surgery, of which there are about 600,000 operations each year.
Pat, I remember years ago when eye used to be included with ear, nose, and throat. People used to say eye, ear, nose, and throat specialist. And then some time ago, I don't know, just when eye was taken out of that little cluster. Now, among the eye people, is there already a beginning separation into subspecialties?
Oh, absolutely. There are what we call anterior segment surgeons, and that's primarily the cataract surgeon or the corneal transplant surgeon, or posterior segment, and that would be the retinal surgeon who operates on retinal detachments and also does various techniques on the vitreous of the eye. And so there are definite subspecialists. Most of us who are doing surgery now, if we consider ourselves to be general ophthalmologists like myself, the basic procedure we do would be the cataract surgery we talked about before, and also the other more common operation is for operating on eye muscles in a cross-eyed youngster. The other more technical procedures, such as retinal detachment or corneal transplant, I personally no longer do these procedures because I felt that I was not proficient enough, because it was not a frequent enough operation to do, so I quit doing both of those procedures about 10 years ago. Now, if I do have a retinal detachment or a person needs a corneal transplant, they will be referred to a subspecialist who performs that type of operation routinely and frequently.
Are these subspecialties boarded, or they've been identified to that degree, or not?
No, they're not boarded, but they do take anywhere from 6 months to 12 months special fellowship training for that particular procedure, usually 12 months. Another area that concerns ophthalmologists is the fitting of glasses and particularly contact lenses, and the competition that one sees now. As an example, just in the past year, Sears Roebuck in Fargo at West Acres opened up an optical part to their store in which you can obtain contact lenses for as little as $80, which definitely has an effect on those of us who are fitting contact lenses. But there is another optical chain which will be opening soon called Pearl Vision. They are, I believe, in all 48 states, and they'll be opening in Fargo quite soon also. So there's been a definite turnaround as far as fitting of contact lenses and also just the plain refraction for glasses. Much more competition. And for the person possibly 10 years from now who's going to obtain glasses, I hear it said that there's going to be equipment, automatic equipment in drugstores where you can walk in and look into a device and press some buttons and you'll have your glasses fall out of the machine.
Oh, goodness. these faces of business that you mentioned, are they hiring qualified ophthalmologists, or who is running your shows?
Well, Sears robots, as an example, they have an optometrist, or possibly two optometrists, who come, I think it's 2 days a week, Thursdays and Fridays, to examine people. Other than that, they just have an optician, just a person there who might be able to fix glasses, or you could buy non-prescription glasses from. But these optometrists, I'm sure, are probably hired by Sears Roebuck, and they are transients. They come to Fargo, then probably go to Sioux Falls or St. Cloud or Duluth the other days of the week.
My goodness, I wasn't aware of this. This is a terrible inroad into a highly respected specialty of medicine. It seems like an unfair commercialization. I think very patently so. And I'm sure you have a board of ophthalmology. Are they taking this lying down, or are they trying to do something?
Well, it's pretty hard because technically you can't. You can't legally do much with our antitrust laws the way they are now. The state of North Dakota does have a statute in which an optometrist cannot actually be hired by an optical firm. In other words, these optometrists that work for Sears Roebuck or the Midwest Vision, which is an optical chain which is in West Acres, they have an optometrist that works for them. However, he cannot be paid by this optical chain by state law, so he has to have a separate door that goes into this optical shop with his name on it. And some arrangement has to be made as far as his salary is concerned to where he doesn't have any financial interest in the firm. Now, Minnesota does not have that type of law. The other problem we're seeing now, as far as the ophthalmologists in this country are concerned, are the state laws which are allowing optometrists to use diagnostic drugs, primarily in the area of an anesthetic drug to put on the cornea where they can check the eye pressure, and they're also now allowed in most states to use dilating drops on the eye to get a better view of the back of the eye. Minnesota has such a law, and North Dakota does. There are now, I think, six states in the United States. The last one was Oklahoma, which also are allowing, by state law, optometrists to use therapeutic drugs. Now, we are lobbying in our legislatures. We have political action committees in ophthalmology. Minnesota has a rather strong one, in which we're trying to eliminate we're trying to keep the optometrist out of the therapeutic end of this, because we don't feel that, as not being trained as a medical doctor, that they should be able to use drugs such as drugs to treat glaucoma. There are various eye drops and various medications such as Diamox that are used. And even though they do take a pharmacology course in their optometric school, it's our feeling that they should not be allowed to use therapeutic drugs. And until just the past 5 or 10 years, they were not allowed to use diagnostic drugs either. But they have a very, very strong lobby in most legislatures, and so these bills are being passed.
Do you foresee, in terms of the patient's welfare, the possibility of harm resulting from these non-professional inroads?
Well, that's just the point. We don't feel that they have the medical background and the expertise to actually diagnose and treat a patient with glaucoma. They, in their optometric training, they concentrate on the fitting of eyeglasses and contact lenses, and they haven't had the background or the, in my opinion, the training necessary to treat, and I think they could harm people. And this is what we're trying to get across to our legislators, that this should be left for the medical profession, for the ophthalmologist. And we're trying to keep the optometrists out of this particular arena. the area of medicine, and particularly as the first ophthalmology is the area of advertising. It's interesting to pick up the paper that I think goes to most of the nursing homes in town. They have a paper that comes out, I think it's twice a month, and I just happened to glance through this several weeks ago, and I noticed that there were advertisements by three different ophthalmologists here in Fargo-Moorhead. The advertising that is going on, not only in the Yellow Pages, but by physicians such as myself, and I also have had advertisements in several of the small local papers in smaller towns of the area, is something, of course, that was unheard of 10, 12 years ago. But now advertising is legal as defined by the Federal Trade Commission, and in fact, if any type of if a person is told not to advertise, or if the advertising is indeed not deceptive or not misleading, this could get into the antitrust lawsuit legal problems that we're already seeing in some states. This is very expensive, of course. You pick up the Sunday Forum today and you'll see probably a full-page advertisement by one of the clinics. They run advertisements in, I guess, every issue of the paper, there's an advertisement by either the Fargo Clinic or Dakota Clinic. And there are also advertisements on television and radio by the local clinics.
Pat, there must be other things, that other ambitions, other aspirations that you have, that certainly the busyness of your profession has kept you from doing, that perhaps you're looking forward to on your retirement. Could you get into that area?
Yes. One thing I would certainly enjoy doing is more traveling. We have traveled, of course, as I mentioned before, in the service, we did go to two different continents, but one of my ambitions is to go to Ireland, which I've never, where I've never been. We've talked about this, my wife and I have, but we have never put together a trip, and that's, of course, where my ancestors are from. And I also, in the past 10 years, have become sort of a World War II nut. I wouldn't mind going over to Normandy and where the big battles were fought, and sort of trace the steps of somebody like Patton and the Battle of the Bulge, and certain areas in Germany as the concentration camps that I've never visited. Have some interest in seeing those. But mainly to travel more. I haven't even been to Glacier Park in this country, and I know it's one of the most beautiful parks anywhere. And I also, even though I do a lot of hunting now with my four sons, this would be something in my retirement that I would very much enjoy, would be to continue to do a lot of hunting in the fall and some fishing in the summer.
Well, Pat, I think we've covered the ground very nicely. I thank you very much for the time that you've spent. This tape will be of great interest to people who will listen to it later, particularly young would-be ophthalmologists. Thank you very much, Pat.
Yep, it was my pleasure, Milo.